Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Pa-a-a-a-a-date. Pa-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-date. Pa-a-a-a-a-a-a. Park date. If you're listening to this, well, there's no chance you will be because I'll delete it. Welcome to Park Date in Central Park, New York. You're going to love today's episode. It's a journey down memory lane across the highways and byways of a long forgotten America with an amazing guy. He's a journalist for WABC Channel 7 in New York, where we met by the Regis Philbin statue. And he also has a website, The Retrologist, and his Insta is Rolando Pujol. It is, of course, Rolando Pujol. And we will be talking about all kinds of retro stuff, TV, Howard Johnson motels, and of course, Pizza Hut. And if you like Park Date and you want to hear more of this kind of stuff where two old men walk around a park and reminisce, then leave us a good review and remember to subscribe to the podcast. The socials are Park Date Podcast and mine is at Christopher Beanland. Enjoy this episode. Welcome to Central Park, and I'm here with Rolando Pujol. Rolando, thank you so much for joining me
today.
My pleasure.
Great to be here.
We've had a great little conversation on the way over from the ABC 7 studios about TV and history and all kinds of things. So we'll talk about those as we go for a little, let's go for a little stroll around Central Park.
We're starting at a pretty good spot here. Tavern on the Green, I guess.
Tavern on the Green.
If you could expense this, we could maybe have some lunch.
Well, we've just talked, two old men talking about the glory days of journalism.
I know.
Expenses. I remember those. I don't think I filed an expense claim for a very, very long time.
You know, or if you did, you got a lot of, so did you really need to do this? Yeah. What was this for and all of that. Times change, man.
Exactly. So, Rolando, you're on staff now at ABC.
Correct.
ABC 7. But one of the things that I really, really love that you do is this thing, the Retrologist.
Correct, yes.
I'm heading on Wednesday upstate to the Catskills.
Ooh.
And maybe that would be a good opportunity for me to check out some of the mid-century, some of the mid-century modernism that you've been you've been documenting.
I already have. After we finish, I'm going to send you a list of places that you should check out.
Yeah.
Just tell me where you'll be, and I'll, because I keep lists for locations to shoot, either places I've visited or places I would like to, for all 50 states, multiple countries.
Yeah.
And principalities, and wherever I hear something, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. That's in the middle of, you know, wherever, Brazil, but someday I'll go there, so I'll make a note of it.
Exactly.
So I have a ready-made Catskills guide
well,
for you.
Well, one of the places I'm staying is the Starlight Motel. You're following.
Yes, yeah. I'm following them. They're following me. I did a piece about them shortly after they reopened and renovated and did the remarkable job that they are doing there. And they're terrific people.
Yeah.
just then I reached out to them and said, look, you know, I took some, I snuck onto your property. I took a bunch of pictures. I want to, but here's what I do.
Yeah.
I'm just not going to post them and say, you know, hey, isn't this cool? Isn't this groovy? I want to know. Tell me the story. Yeah. What's the history of this place? How did you get involved in this place? What are you trying to do with this place? Because what I try to do with a retrologist is really go to a deeper level.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty pictures are nice. A little caption that says, you know, the Starlight Motel since 19 whatever. Done, right? Easy. And then you move on with your day. But each one of these things for me is a little kind of a craft piece.
Yeah.
It's something that I, especially now that I have this audience, and I think I got the audience because I put this level of work and passion and thought into every single post. So there is no such thing as a throwaway post. I would rather not post for days than post something that's substandard. So I reached out to them. We did an email interview, put together something very, very nice. And it was great because I felt like I was on this particular beat, I was onto this story early. Because
yeah.
that place is just on fire. You
yeah.
know, it is really very, very popular. And they, you know, are part of this broader trend of revival in the Catskills that is very refreshing to see. Because the general, when I tell people who are maybe 10 or 20 years older than me that I'm going up to the Catskills this weekend, and they're like, oh my God, how utterly depressing. Really? You know, all those rundown resorts and
yeah.
there's no life up there and the economy is miserable. And I'm like, yeah, no, and for sure. And that's certainly part of the story. And there are elements of that that still are there. But there is a great deal of revival too.
Mm.
And people rediscovering the Catskills. I only wish that I had bought real estate up there even 5 years
yeah,
ago.
Could have made a fortune.
I could have made a fortune, you know, and I'd have this lovely weekend place. Anyway, and now about a year after my profile of the Starlight, the folks behind the renovation of the Terrace Motel in nearby Ellenville, just down Route 209, reached out to me, and they kind of gave me an exclusive on their plans for that property,
yeah.
which had been abandoned for a while, but had good bones,
yeah.
you know, good mid-century building, a wonderful sign, and they said, would you be interested in telling our story? And I'm like, you're darn tootin' I'd be interested in telling your story. And that was back in June of 21, I want to say.
Yeah.
And they're making progress. They're moving along, and I can't wait to get up there and see the final result. I can't wait to stay at the Starlight at some point. So
yeah.
I'm a little bit jealous, I got to say. Good for you,
yeah,
man.
Come join me.
I'm going to crash your hello. Hey, Christopher.
Exactly.
Surprise.
Well, yeah,
you know, I've got coffee.
bring it Danish. We've got to
there you go.
Yeah.
All right. All right. I'm on it.
Yeah, but I do think it's interesting. That whole history, I've never been before, so I'm really...
Oh, how,
really,
how wonderful.
Yeah, really interesting.
You've seen Dirty Dancing, of course.
I've seen Dirty Dancing.
Okay.
Exactly. So I'm kind of thinking, is it going to be like Dirty Dancing, and it also, is it going to be like the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel?
There's going to be a little bit of that.
Where they go to the resorts. I was learning about the Borscht Belt.
Yes.
That history of like Jewish comedy and stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's still plenty of traces of that, both extant and a gone.
Yeah.
And there's actually up in sort of the extreme north, I guess, extreme northwestern fringe of the Catskills, very much closer to Binghamton than, say, you know, the core of the Catskills, the actual resort from the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Is there and can be purchased, not purchased, can be visited. I think it was on the market for a while. I don't know. I think it sold. I'm not sure. But there's even a big billboard that was featured in the show that you'll recognize.
Right.
That, at least when I was up there, when I visited during a snowstorm in December of 2019, just driving up there in the snow, I do these crazy things.
Yeah.
you know, it was there. I thought I could send you some pictures from the story notes if you want.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah. So, good for you. Yeah, but the Catskills are just, you know, teeming with this stuff. But my, you know, portfolio, if you will, is certainly national.
Yeah,
you know?
You've gone all across the country.
All over
you?
The place.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
What are some of the discoveries you've made, Rolando, that you've really... that have really opened your eyes, or that you've thought, wow, this is an incredible thing?
Well, you know, for me, the transcendent moment where I think I really realized that I'm going to kind of double down on this and really, really, really make it like my avocation and perhaps one day my vocation full on, was a trip in 2013 with some buddies where we explored Route 66 from end to end, Chicago to Santa Monica. remarkable experience. And it was not only what we saw, you know, the architectural remnants, the old signs, the ghost towns, the natural vistas, but it was also, and perhaps more importantly, it was the people.
Yeah.
And talking to them and becoming to understand that these places survive not by accident, you know. Yeah, sure, an abandoned relic will, but generally what I post about are not abandoned relics, but rather places that have defied the odds, that somehow are still here. Why are they still here? You know, what is driving them forward? And it's people who care about them, people who are passionate about them, people who have made a very serious choice in their life. I mean, they passed up potentially far more remunerative career pursuits, living in other places. They're tied to this place because it means something to them. And the fact that these places get the kind of response that they do on social media and other outlets, I mean, books and everything, reflects how meaningful and significant they are.
Yeah, so exactly. And we're talking, as well as motels, about things like restaurants a lot, stores, kind of eccentric buildings.
All the full range of that.
Yeah.
I mean, you will find it, you know, certainly it was there on 66, but I am looking for that. You don't have to go on the Great American Road Trip on the mother road that is Route 66 to find this stuff.
Yeah.
Basically, what I tell people to do who are interested, you know, and are looking to make their own discoveries and have their own journeys, is first of all to follow me, because I will give them great advice. And I just launched a Substack newsletter, so there'll be plenty of good stuff in there as well. I can talk a little bit about that later. But I mean, to basically just like open your eyes to where you are. Mm. I mean, the roots of the Ritualogist began, you know, in the mid-2000s when I was writing for AM New York and Newsday. I was an editor in those publications here in the city. And I would basically write about similar places right here in Manhattan, whether it be preservation battles. I launched a series called Endangered NYC that received a very notable award. There were people coming up to me saying, why aren't the Daily News and the New York Times covering, you know, what's happening in these neighborhoods and how development is rampant, and we have to sort of stand up for mom and pop businesses. Who is advocating for the survival of the soul of New York during one of the greatest development run-ups that was, you know, the first couple of terms of the Bloomberg administration?
Right.
A very hostile time.
And that's a fascinating story in itself, isn't that kind of community organization. And also, go back to Mrs. Maisel. I couldn't believe my eyes when I saw Jane Jacobs appear. Do you remember in that episode where they're having a meeting in Washington Square? Because I remember, I've written a bit about this as well, like the plans for the Lower Manhattan Expressway.
Yes, our buddy was, Robert Moses.
Yeah, Robert Moses wanted to basically demolish all of Little Italy.
Yes, he did.
The village and all these places.
Soho,
and,
goodbye.
Yeah, you know? Jane Jacobs and all the locals kind of got together to protest that.
Correct.
And that kind of spirit can live on, can't it? The community says, okay, like actually we want to maybe keep these historic buildings, they mean something to us.
That's right. There is significance in this. I mean, you think about the run-up in value of, you know, the properties that Robert Moses wanted to redevelop down there. I mean, clearly there was the economic imperative was not to build the highway to facilitate faster transportation of goods and services. It was to invest in the communities, you know, and because that is where the beauty and the history, but also for those who are speculative, and that is how New York began. It was a Dutch outpost where the main purpose was, we don't care who you are, what your skin is, color is, who you sleep with. We just, do you want to make money? You've come to the right place. Welcome to New Amsterdam. Have fun.
Yeah.
Right? That DNA is still here. The smartest economic move at the time was not to demolish, but rather to invest and build in the existing buildings and streets and businesses that were there. I mean, you think about what was lost in New York in those years. I mean, the neighborhoods that were erased wholesale in the Bronx and other parts of the city. You think about even where we just met at right across that catty corner from the ABC headquarters is Lincoln Center. And that was a vibrant neighborhood at one time.
Yeah, what was
dismissed as a slum,
right.
San Juan Hill, but and it's of course its ruins were forever preserved in the original West Side Story, right?
Oh,
so,
right.
Yeah, and that was shot there.
Even in Central Park, Seneca Village, right?
Correct.
Was here.
That it was here.
People don't realize.
No, there's a sense.
African-American residents were hired.
Absolutely. There was business here. There were things here that were simply deemed unimportant, and they were subsumed to the broader goal that had been sort of advocated by William Cullen Bryant, that, you know, we need a Central Park, we need a place that we can preserve. And I certainly get the impulse, because even then, in the 1840s and 50s, people, DNA, New York being New York, it develops, you know, it changes every generation. And I think there was an alarm that whatever bucolic open spaces were left in New York were going to be eventually gone.
Yeah.
So, and it's quite funny, you look all around us, we're seeing all these glacial erratics.
These rocks are all fake, right?
That's right. Everything else is fake.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
Fake in the sense that it was very carefully planned.
Exactly.
You know, down to the smallest tree.
It looks natural. That's the thing about park, isn't it?
Yeah.
It looks natural, but it's actually a kind of man-made.
It was man-made. They thought about it in terms of different aspects. This area will appeal to families and children. This area will appeal to right where we were near the sheep meadow.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there were actually once upon a time sheep there.
They should bring them back.
They should.
I think it would be great to have sheep there.
And to go back to what we were talking about earlier, do you know who got rid of the sheep?
No.
In 1934?
Was it Moses?
Yes!
Robert is always Robert Moses.
This guy, you know. Freaking sheep. Yeah. They're out. You know, I mean.
What did Robert Moses have against the sheep?
I don't know. I mean, you'd have to ask him, but he's in a mausoleum in the Bronx, you know. But it's probably covered, no doubt, in the Robert Caro book, you know, The Power Broker, has been taunting me from my bookshelf for a good 20 years.
It's a very big book.
I'm going to read it. Yeah. It's gonna change my life. My understanding of New York will never be more sophisticated.
Yeah.
Still haven't done it.
We could do that in the Starlight Motel. There's probably yes. No data service there. So
no, there you go.
We have to read it.
There you go. I mean, that's a good place to, you know, get 1,000+ pages. But anyway.
Yeah.
It's funny that the sheepfold that was there, the building, that eventually became Tavern on the Green, which is, of course, one of the great new iconic New York restaurants in its current iteration since 2014. But its glory days were back in from the mid-70s through the early to mid-2000s under the control of Warner Leroy, descended from the great Warner Brothers dynasty and his family. I mean, that place in its day was one of those great late 20th century restaurants that you had to see to believe, the Crystal Room. I went once with my family after catching the Nutcracker at Lincoln Center. I think it was back in, it was in 2001. And right after 9/11, everybody was horrifically, of course, traumatized, right? We fortunately lost nobody there, but it was the kind of blow that you never get over, right? And so we were on this mission to visit like iconic New York restaurants and places and sort of savor them. You know, because we could. Like, we were, 9/11, a bit of a digression here, but on September 25th of that year, I was going to take my parents to celebrate their 30th wedding anniversary on top of the building at the restaurant, Windows on the World.
Windows on the World.
Yeah. Did not happen, of course, you know. But we ended up going instead to the Four Seasons, because I wanted to have this iconic New York experience.
I was literally about to talk about the Four Seasons as well, Orlando. Yeah, this is the one with the Rothko. Paintings
tremendous.
On the wall.
Tremendous.
Yeah.
You would just walk in
like?
There. It was like the very height of mid-century corporate facing modernism.
So that was a Mies van der Rohe building with Rothko.
That's right.
Rothko murals.
Johnson design.
Philip Johnson as well, sorry, yeah.
Oh, course. My God. Yeah. It was like walking into some sort of rarefied temple, a remarkable experience. I mean, nothing will ever, you'll never be able to have that Windows on the World experience. You know, I never actually ended up going there. But 30 years later, on my parents' 50th wedding anniversary in 2021, I did take them to the new restaurant on top of One World Trade Center. So we did sort of tie that loop in a way. Not the same experience. But still something special.
Yeah, kind of a full circle.
In a way, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's really interesting. There's those iconic those iconic restaurants like the Four Seasons, but also, yeah. Rolando, you tell the story of the mom and pop, like the Lunchettes.
Yeah.
I was reading, your piece about one of those. Mm-hmm. On the Upper East Side the other day.
Yeah, exactly. The Lexington Candy Shop.
Lexington Candy Shop.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. You can get sodas and floats and things.
So I've posted about that restaurant a couple of times on my Instagram. And then always looking to find ways to marry my vocation with my avocation, I did produced an ABC 7 piece for the localish franchise about that place. And we interviewed the longtime owner. And it was... beyond being a brutally hot day and the AC wasn't up to par, it was a very, very fun experience. I mean, it used to be the Luncheonettes. And what a Luncheonette is, for those who don't know, is basically it's a small little restaurant, but usually fairly slender, tucked into the street grid with a long soda fountain. With stools and a lot of New York comfort food staples on the menu, and drinks like
pastrami, that kind of thing.
Your basic hamburger and fries, and then some like concoctions like lime rickeys and egg creams and these kind of things that you can only.
An
egg cream does not involve. It doesn't involve egg.
Right.
And it doesn't involve cream.
That's a new
one.
But
it does involve. It's like basically. It's like milk, seltzer water, and then chocolate syrup.
Right.
And then it's just stirred up, and it's a delightful, frothy concoction.
Wow.
Some believe that the chocolate syrup can only be, if it's a chocolate cream, has to be Fox's You Bet.
Right.
Very specific about that. You will find Fox's You Bet at your neighborhood Gristiti's or... local supermarket, but others feel it doesn't have to be that brand. Just it could be the syrup that we create right here at the Luncheonette.
Yeah.
But regardless, I mean, it is really one of those places, and that's so special. And it's also one that has been around so long that it's been immortalized in movies. If you've ever seen, it's one of my favorite movies set in New York. It's called 3 Days of the Condor. It's Robert Redford, Faye Dunaway, Cliff Robertson. And there's a very important scene, well, a kind of important scene, set in that Luncheonette with Robert Redford in it. And the place is, you look at the images in the film and the way it looks today, no significant changes. And the gentleman that I interviewed, the owner,
he's in the movie, isn't he?
Yes,
yeah, exactly.
Yes. I think he yells like chicken plate or something like that. And there he is, which is just absolutely wild. And we conducted the interview pretty much where he was standing in the movie, which is like, how cool is that? That we have that kind of continuity. So Luncheonettes like that in 1975, they were already disappearing. I mean, fast food was on the rise, and real estate was, becoming more valuable. But there were still quite a number of them. Today, in New York City, generally speaking, there aren't that many left. I mean, you can count them with one or two hands, I mean, there might be some that are newer or that are embracing that concept. But in terms of the old traditional ones, I mean, you're down to just a few. And you also have to go outside of the immediate environs of New York City, at least New York City proper, to places like, for example, Hildebrandt's, which is out in Williston Park on Long Island, not far from Queens. But that is quite possibly, in my opinion, the most beautiful storefront in the country.
Right.
You've seen it on my Instagram, I think,
and
posted it many times. It's almost like a go-to. Like if you need, I've hit a rut. I need some a boost in engagement. I'll post Hildebrandt's again, But they went through a real... crisis with there was a new landlord, there was a very expensive rent hike, and the owners who had been running it for decades were on the verge of closing until these two gentlemen came along and basically saved it. And it was when that news broke, I mean, it shook not only like the preservationist / roadside America world and in social media, but I would say like anyone who values history, who values the importance of mom and pop restaurants and that sense of continuity and community that these places provide. Whether you live on Long Island or whether you live in Santa Monica, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The world is richer when these places can survive.
Absolutely. You know? So, yeah, we need to have those, and it's always a pleasure to visit those places. But as well, like, obviously there's, as you know, I remember reading Fast Food Nation, and I thought, oh my god, the fast food industry is actually a big problem, and it is. However,
yes,
there's a kind of perverse beauty in in those cookie cutter fast food places, isn't there? And I like how you kind of talk about that, Rolando, as well.
Yes.
Like, here's an original Pizza Hut.
Do you know about that? There was a gentleman. I hope he's listening to this, because I just deleted his comment and just forgot about it rather than engage. I generally ignore trolls, but don't feed the beast, as they say.
Yeah,
but
right.
This guy, this time last year, I think he'd been following me almost from the beginning. He said, "That's it. I'm out. I'm on following you. This is the second Taco Bell piece this week. You know, I didn't follow you for this stuff. This is garbage. Have a great life, you big fat jerk."
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, okay, well, you know.
It was me.
I'm not gonna,
it was me,
you?
Sorry.
You set this whole thing up. Now we have a dramatic confrontation. I storm off. This turns into a whole scene. This is awful. This is what a disaster.
Yeah.
But no,
it was you all along.
You had this.
I
knew it. I knew it. Should have known this was a trap. But I get that occasionally. But generally speaking, I would say so much of the growth in my account has come from maybe not so much the mom and pops, but rather the quirky surviving examples of the early fast food restaurants in America. And if I were to say two things have really driven that, a lot of that is, you know, sort of the great boogeyman, which is of course McDonald's, which is blamed for all of society's problems, from obesity to lower wages to the destruction of mom and pop restaurants. And listen, there's truth in a lot of that, but it's not all this horrific. McDonald's isn't necessarily the great boogeyman. As a matter of fact, you know, for many people, McDonald's has been the means by which they have been able to achieve financial success and security. I mean, we forget that so many of these fast food places that we so quickly deride as change sapping America of their soul are run by not the corporation, but by people.
Yeah,
they're
franchises, aren't they?
They're franchises, right, exactly. And they're struggling just as much as they have more resources perhaps from corporate, but they're struggling just like the other guy too, who's running the luncheonette. I mean, different things. I don't want to necessarily equate the two, but it's not this, you know, luncheonette versus McDonald's thing. You know, I mean, I at least don't see it that way.
Yeah.
Someone might hear this and say, "This guy doesn't know what he's talking about," but I do, and I do feel that way. And I think there has been a tendency over the past 10 years for fast food places to sort of disassociate themselves from their history, from their iconic roof lines and signage. That it made them remarkable in the era where those things were valued as important marketing tools. You know, you're driving down the highway, you see the golden arches, you see the distinctive roof on the building, the men's, so that's McDonald's.
Yeah.
And I know I'm going to get the same experience at this one that I got. Remember, fast food places of that era, McDonald's and Burger King and pizza, these places emerged to fill a need.
Yeah.
I mean, traveling could be dicey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you weren't necessarily going to have a reliable meal. I'm not saying it's fast food is necessarily healthy. It's not, but you know what you're getting.
Yeah.
Right? And whereas back in the 30s and 40s on the road, you may not have.
Yeah.
Same reason that Holiday Inn rose, because it gave people a reliable lodging experience. But anyway, what's been happening is over the past 10 to 15 years, they've been moving away from this. You've seen this with Taco Bell. You've seen this perhaps with the greatest amount of pain for people of my generation, sort of Generation X, with McDonald's, which sort of discarded all their McDonald Land characters, those fun play places.
Right.
Everything that made McDonald's.
Hamburglar, those things.
All of this, the grimace, you know, and the buildings that see, in Europe, I've seen new McDonald's that echo the mansard roofline.
Mm-hmm.
There's certain element that they use more earth tones.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more like, I just wish what McDonald's had done is not completely scrap the 50 years of heritage, but rather find a way to evolve it and still keep the cues.
Exactly.
You know?
I wonder if Rolando, they may be seeing the value of that nostalgia, because I read that they launched an adult Happy Meal.
I think maybe
they're seeing that.
They're
also
starting to get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, and you were talking about, as I was a huge Pizza Hut fan.
When
I was a kid, I was growing up in England in a small town, and you know, I was obsessed by America, and Pizza Hut was the coolest thing you can imagine in the 80s.
Pizza Hut was so, like, McDonald's had a certain level of comfort, but they were ultimately very unpleasant seating, you know, it was plastic seating, and that, harsh fluorescent lighting, but walking into a Pizza Hut on a Friday night after winning your football game or whatever, what a remarkable experience, right?
Really cool. And though, so when you were talking on your feed about people who have kept these original Pizza Huts.
Fascinating.
They look like they're from Stranger Things or
correct.
Something. Yeah,
correct. It looks amazing. The 70s through 90s peak of the Pizza Hut dine-in experience. And what's...
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Interesting is what Pizza Hut has done, and they've never made a big deal about this. Yeah. There's never been, to my knowledge, a press release or a press push for this. But what they have done is, this is mainly in smaller towns where the original Pizza Hut buildings have survived with the red roof. Not all have red roofs, but nevertheless, the bones of the old building are still there.
Yeah.
Is that they've offered them the Pizza Hut classic concept.
Yeah.
So what they do is they retro-renovate the place. Rather than going the McDonald's route, which is tearing down the old 1974 Mansard and putting up a muck box, as I like to call them, or a muck Bauhaus building, you know, which is ever so clean. Very high-end what they're doing there. You know, but they've gone back to that essential 70s Pizza Hut experience with the faux Tiffany chandeliers with a Pizza Hut logo, the checkerboard table.
I want to live there. That would be amazing.
The red booth, it's so cozy.
Yeah.
So we're talking about tell me one of your big discoveries. In 2020, I was driving along Route 6, US 6, which is one of the early transcontinental roads, a very interesting one that doesn't get a lot of attention, but I was up in Pennsylvania, and I'm just driving along, and I see this Pizza Hut sign in the distance with the old 1970s logo. It says Pizza Hut Classic.
Yeah.
I'm like,
what the heck
is this? You know, and if you ask any of my friends who I've taken these road trips with, I'm always obsessed with finding like an untouched Pizza Hut.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a Kentucky Fried Chicken that still has the 1970s bucket spinning or something. Like, I can't find these things. You know, and I'm like, what is this? I pull over. It was closed. The dining room was closed because of COVID at the time. But I peer in a window and I'm like, what? You know, and I'm literally, I was alone and I'm like calling people like, what do you want? Like, it's an emergency. What is it? I found an old Pizza Hut. Like, oh, Jesus Christ, you had me scared. You know, that's an emergency. Look what it is, though. You know, and I couldn't believe it. And then there's they each have a plaque by the door that explains the concept, what they're trying to do, which is go back to the essential experience of a dine-in restaurant. And it's written, it's attributed to Dan Carney, who was one of the founders of Pizza Hut. What a great concept. And so I posted about this, and like my account blew up.
Yeah.
Like, what the people just ended? Are there more? And I knew of one more in Warren, Ohio. Yeah, that was it. And then I kept doing research and getting tips, and I found, oh, there's a third and a fourth and a fifth. And I visited over the years several of these. And then finally, a couple of weeks ago, I decided, you know, one thing I would always hear from people is, is there a master list of where these places are? I'm like, no, you know, they're not sure, they're not talking. I guess I'm going to have to do it, you know? So I spent a good bit of time doing the research, and I put together a list. I published it a couple of weeks ago. The thing went crazy. The post,
yeah.
We were grateful to have it. But then, this is what I was hoping would happen, people emerged from the woodwork. Oh, there's also one in this town. Oh, you missed the one in my hometown. How could you? It's like, well, thank you for telling me.
Yeah.
Don't give me a hard time about it. I'm going to put it on the list.
Yeah.
And of course, I would have confirmed that this was the case, either by calling the restaurant or checking on Google Maps. And sure enough, hey, look, it's been converted as of 2022, you know. And so now the list contains well over 50 of these Pizza Hut locations. And it all began with that one that I stumbled upon on a road trip in June 2020. So I think, you know, now I don't know how Pizza Hut's doing financially, whether this is helping, because this is part of an overall brand move to go back to nostalgic elements, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, nobody out pizzas the Hut, the return of the old logo. You see this in all their marketing, right? But it must be having some impact, because I got a snarky comment. Tell me the truth. Are you on Pizza Hut's?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You know.
Social media. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, I'm really not. And if I were, I would certainly make that clear. Yeah. I mean, I do have some semblance of ethical journalistic standards here. I'm just a fanboy who really appreciates what Pizza Hut is doing, and so do so many people. So it clearly must be having an impact. I received an email the other day from somebody, and she just wrote back to me. I haven't read the response. But she reached out to me to get advice for her wedding. She wants to have her wedding
at a
Pizza Hut Classic. But the key thing
that
is that she marry it with, so to speak, with a location where there's also like a nice resort, a hotel where her relatives can stay.
Right.
You know, and I suggested one location. I sent her my list. She looked it over. And based on what I had to read the whole email, but she found another location, I think in Arkansas. She's like, we're going to do that one.
This is amazing.
How amazing.
Rolando, the more I think about this, the more I think this is going to make a great documentary. Should we make a documentary film together?
I
think we should do that. You know, we should film at the wedding, because that would be a great...
You know,
that would be a great set piece.
You're onto something here. And then like commit to it, like that documentary series and those kids that you check in on every 7 years.
Exactly.
You know, because there will be life, human life, that will emerge from this couple's love of
exactly.
Pizza Hut.
Yeah.
Which was facilitated by me.
Yeah.
So if I don't get an invite to this wedding, there is no justice in the world.
Absolutely. You need to get an invite.
Absolutely.
But I think here's another thing as well. That era, right, there was so much great architecture and great design.
Yeah.
And when you see, you know, these corporations kind of like updating their logo, it always leaves me cold.
Kills me.
You know, you see, like they had great design. I remember when United as well did the Massimo Vignelli design, which looks amazing for something that's kind of lame.
If you want to really have a trippy experience, go on YouTube and find United commercials from the early 70s, and they will bring a tear to your eye.
Yeah.
They're just absolutely gorgeous. But yeah, they discarded all of that, and I guess they wanted to merge with Continental. Okay, you will keep a little bit of this, but clearly that was such a boardroom marriage.
Yeah.
Like, do what's right for the brand. You don't have to keep the Continental globe.
Exactly.
Jesus.
And American Airlines as well. A great
Redfall
logo, and the new one looks so bad in comparison.
So bad. You know, those iconic planes with
they
the silver.
Silver planes with the logo. It looks amazing.
Right. Lower maintenance. You don't have to play them. I don't get when brands do that, especially in this time where there is so much. You know, we're living in an era where nostalgia has always been a factor. It's an old Greek word, right? But it's probably never been stronger than it is right now, certainly in my lifetime, and I'm pushing 50, and that's because, you know, we're living through really awful, wretched times, and these things give us certainly relief.
Yeah.
But also a continuity and maybe hope that, you know, things will get better.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. And there's a sort of warm, kind of homeliness to the whole the whole thing in a way. And, you know, when you were telling me about your journey, Rolando, across country, I've always been so interested in America. And one of my relatives, when I was a kid, gave me these two books, which were about sites you would see off the interstate.
That's interesting.
So they had a lot of these, you know, the very like ironic buildings, like a basket, the giant basket.
Which, by the way, I post a lot about
exactly,
those places.
Exactly, yeah.
Programmatic architecture.
Yeah, exactly. The Beagle and all these kind of things that you could see. And I thought, wow, this is incredible. And actually, like, there's something kind of weirdly comforting in the weird.
Absolutely.
Right?
You know,
like, there's something
we are just
about.
Drawn to these places, right? You know, because they're just fun. I mean, somewhere lurking inside of us, and this is, I think, why the McDonald's changes have been so heartfelt for people, is a child, you know? I mean, somebody, and maybe not a child, a child in the sense that a child... children approach life with a sense of wonder and joy.
Yes, I think you're onto something.
That's
there,
what
exactly.
it is. And this is this is a bit of whimsy in an otherwise pretty horrific world that we've been born into. And we have, if we're lucky, 80 or 90 years to figure our way through it, right? This is something that is a bright spot that takes us out of our everyday and elevates us in a way, even though it's an office building shaped like a gigantic Longaberger basket, which I visited the other day.
Have you been there? Yeah.
And it's certainly the saddest place now because the Longaberger company collapsed and somebody bought its assets, but the building's empty. It's very, very sad, you know? Happens all the time. But I know I love visiting giant teapots and coffee kettles and coffee pots and you name it. I mean, there's just so much fun. This week, actually Wednesday, I'm flying out to Cincinnati and then driving back to New York over the weekend. And I've got a list of easily over 100 places I want to visit. And one of them is, I think it's Shippenburg, PA, where there is a gigantic paint can that has been burning a hole in my list of my bucket list for a while, and so many other things that I want to shoot too. So there's just so much out there to see. I wonder whether the books that you had when you were a kid were by John Margolis.
Possibly,
because he was somebody who was doing this kind of documentation well before Instagram, back in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
Because even then, when there was so much more of it, he sensed that this stuff was precious, valuable, and being very quickly erased.
Exactly, being erased. And I wonder if, you know, certain people have kind of drawn attention to it over the years. You, Rolando. I think about maybe Robert Venturi and Denise Scott Brown in their book, like, is it a duck or a decorated shed?
Which we visited too, you know?
Exactly. There's a really good 99% Invisible.
I think, for these intellectuals like them, you know, elevating these places and saying, no, this is actually significant. This is not merely disposable roadside kitsch. But
maybe that makes it seem more valuable, more important.
Absolutely, you know.
And I also think about, I'm a huge Mad Men fan. And episodes of Mad Men, aren't there, where the Draper family go and, I think about, there's a Howard Johnson, they're always going on about Howard Johnson's, aren't they?
I've written about this.
Howard Johnson's,
I'll send you links about this, because when they had the Howard Johnson storyline, you know, they were allegedly stopping at a Howard Johnson's up in Plattsburgh, New York. I think the Concept 65 Hojo's, which was no longer there, has been repurposed. But they filmed it at the exterior at a Howard Johnson's that had been closed in Baldwin Park, California, which I have visited. And you know, and then I brought into some of my other experiences with Howard Johnson. It's funny you mentioned Hojo's, because in terms of brands and the fate of brands that really inspired me to sort of go down this rabbit hole that has now consumed my whole life, Howard Johnson's was one of those kind of those agitators, if you will. As a child, I grew up within driving easy close distance of two Howard Johnson's, where my parents would alternate me and my sister's birthday parties. And so Hojo's always meant something very special to me, and it was very sad to see them go gradually. Certainly the restaurant branch, which began to collapse in the 80s.
Yeah, people don't really know that brand anymore, but it was kind of, sort of hotel, restaurant.
Yeah, the hotel brand, now owned by Wyndham, is still around, and they occasionally seem to hint that they're going in some legacy direction, but they never quite do. I would love if Wyndham said, you know what, we're going to bring back Howard Johnson restaurants.
Yeah, yeah.
But they never quite seem to do it. So when the Howard Johnsons that had survived in Times Square, which was one of the last vestiges of what I like to call Travis Bickle's Times Square. You know, the taxi
Travis Bickle's Times Square, yeah.
It was really with a neon sign and the interior that had not been updated since, John Lindsay was mayor. And the place was incredible. And it closed in July of 2005. And I remember I was at Newsday at the time, and I was like, this is a big story, we got to cover it. And we covered it. And I even sent an ex of mine at the time to go to the auction for its contents. I was at work that day, I couldn't make it.
Yeah.
And one of the things I yielded from that experience was a massive orange sign that says cocktails.
Right.
That had
Have you got that in your house?
It's in my house.
That's fantastic.
Every morning, as I have my coffee, I think about making it morning, an Irish coffee.
Yeah, every morning you have your cocktail.
Yeah, cocktails. It's cocktail time at Howard Johnson. You know, the loss of that, and then another place around the corner, which was the mom and pop, watering hole, McHale's in 2006, also very traumatic. And I'm like, okay, you know, we've got to start documenting these places, and more importantly, not just documenting them as isn't this pretty, but really understand them, understand their stories, and make the argument for people who are in a position to do something about it, why they should be preserved.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Why New York City needs basically laws that are more conducive to legacy businesses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. And I think, you know, with that sense of like nostalgia and interest in history, we were talking a little bit about television earlier. I think television has a great power, doesn't it? You know, you think of Mad Men, we talked about Mrs. Maisel, we mentioned Times Square, it made me think of The Deuce as well, which is another great show. All those, like Vinyl, The Get Down, all these kind of like retro shows really actually open people's eyes. Maybe they don't realize they're getting a history lesson.
No.
You kind of sneak it in, and then it kind of makes people think, well, actually, that's quite interesting.
That's quite interesting.
Yeah, maybe and we should save some of these things.
Absolutely, yeah. And I love the fact that there is this trend in society that again, corporate America seems to be waking up to it. Mm. We see the examples of Pizza Hut, we see the examples of Burger King, which has brought back its a version of its legacy logo. Their most recent campaign plays off a lot of nostalgic elements. They have it Your Way campaign updated for today. You would mention McDonald's, which has sort of been on this self-destructive tear for the past decade. The adult Happy Meal. Even though our beloved characters have like two sets of eyes, to go with this collaboration that they're doing with the streetwear brand, nevertheless, it's a nice little signal. And I found it very ironic that the Happy Meal box features a red-roofed mansard building, which is, of course, has been there in their corporate board in Chicago. It's like the enemy number one, that building. demolish, you know. But I think that's encouraging. And in a few days, maybe today, they are dropping their Halloween pails, Happy Meal pails, which they haven't done those in a number of years. So I think corporate America is starting to sort of get it more. I mean, because listen, I mean, if they go on my account or many other accounts too, I'm hardly the only person writing about this stuff or posting about this stuff. They're like, Jesus, why are we fighting this?
Yeah.
Embrace this, you know? And so I think that's very good. And then we're also seeing a trend where, you know, when you see a picture of New York of a, where we just met on the Upper West Side in Columbus Avenue in 1975.
This way.
And you see the storefronts. It isn't just that it's old timey and look at the funny sideburns and bell bottoms everybody's watching. It's just the texture of the street.
Yeah.
It's so much more appealing with a mix of signage and fonts, and it's just much more appealing to the eye.
Yeah.
Over the past 20 years, we've gone away from that.
Yeah.
Signage has become very utilitarian, you know, and bland and safe. You don't want to offend anybody's sensibilities. We're a posh neighborhood. We don't want to have anything outrageous or God forbid, tacky, neon or funky fonts and typeface. Yeah. But there's been a push against it. You're seeing a lot more of this sort of come back in new neon and new signage. And one of the key players in this space is a company called Noble Signs, where they're based in Brooklyn, two young guys who, like me, around the same time began to realize that, hey, New York is losing this texture. We're sign makers. You know, we can do something about it.
Yeah.
So they've started a kind of a bespoke kind of boutique business out in Brooklyn where they will make create a whole brand identity for a mom and pop business that includes a really smashing sign, you know, that you look at it and you're in love. A great example of that is what they did for Ace's Pizza in Williamsburg. I mean, from the signage to the interior, they even created a little mascot, little Ace character.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fabulous.
I know it very well. Yeah, very very retro, very cool looking place. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and so it's nice to see that. And it's not, this is, and again, I think there's some of the pushback on this might be, well, we're just fetishizing a certain era or a certain style.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think so as much as reacting against how bland and banal and boring our world has become. It doesn't necessarily have to ape the design language of 1970. Do something new, but make it interesting, visually stimulating, fun, exciting. Yeah. That speaks to your soul,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And I feel I feel like there's a kind of, you can sense that optimism, especially that age in America in the '60s in America. There's lots of optimism. You can kind of sense that in the design and the architecture. And
that's right. Even while America was beginning to go through all these convulsions. You know, looking around you, it was a very happy, optimistic place, at least in the storefront design. You know, but
I mean, not always the case in society. But
certainly
yeah.
not, but yeah. yes, but in other ways, absolutely. Yeah. You know, and I think this counter trend toward creating more lively streetscapes, I think is very. Very welcoming. I couldn't be happier that that's happening. And if I could in any way have either contributed to that or can facilitate it, then I couldn't be happier.
Exactly. Yeah. And do people, do your viewers on ABC News and the website, you know, people on the website get in touch? And do you think the stories resonate with them?
They do. I mean, these sorts of stories perform well for ABC. But I would say where it has the greatest impact is on my own social platforms, on my own Instagram.
Yeah.
Like, I tell you, man, I mean, I had a post I did on the occasion of the 82nd birthday of Dairy Queen, where I posted a collection of Dairy Queens that I've shot around the country, including my favorite one, a picture of a Dairy Queen in Butler, Pennsylvania on a snowy February day.
Yeah.
It's just, such a good picture, and I love it. And so this thing is pushing 70,000 likes.
Yeah.
I probably picked up got 10,000 followers just from that one post, but it really, really resonated.
Yeah.
So I would say, you know, it's, you know, there's no boundaries to the interest that I get for this stuff. And one of the things that's very encouraging is when I look at my analytics, that the bulk of my readers are like basically in the demographic of 18 to 34, 40, in that general range. So they're younger people who really appreciate that stuff. And that gives me a lot of hope that it's not just an old fogey like me, you know, that gets this. You know, that it's people of all ages who think this is significant and who believe in it enough to, you know, interact with me and share my content and get it out there and further amplify it. So
exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah. People need to check out your Insta. So it's at
Rolando. It's my name, Pujol. Rolando Pujol. At this Rolando point, I'm sort Pujol. Of married to that. I'm not going to change it to Retrologist or whatever. And I have a Substack as well, which is also my name, which you can find on my Instagram. And the Substack offers in-depth newsletters and additional services. Things like guides to particular cities or subject matter, including that Pizza Hut list that we were talking about. So head on to the Substack.
I'm going
to
get that.
And see where you can plan your wedding.
Yeah. You know, like, pizza Hut wedding. I might have to do
pizza
that.
Pizza Hut weddings.
I might have to do that myself.
There's something here. You know, so, like, I mean.
And ABC 7 New York, you have stories. Yes. So on there, we're just walking past.
We're walking by the building right here, the wonderful historic headquarters of ABC, ABC News, and
WABC. Another great logo.
The logo. Yeah, Paul Rand.
Yeah.
1962.
That ABC logo is an absolute classic.
It's an icon. Yeah. I mean, they have only made slight modifications to it here. A couple of years ago, they tweaked the letters a little bit. But generally, it is a perfect logo. Mm-hmm. And the same year that the logo was introduced, the Circle 7 logo that WABC uses was introduced by a graphic designer based in, I believe, San Francisco. It was first rolled out at the ABC station KGO in San Francisco, quickly spread to the other ABC stations and some non-ABC stations as well, the Circle 7, or at least non-ABC-owned stations. and you do not have to improve on that logo. You can vary the width and the, you can play with little things that designers see, but for the public, it's been the same logo for just celebrated its 60th anniversary. That's an incredible run.
It's incredible. So, it's incredible. Yeah. I have to ask you one final question,
Orlando. Yes.
Is it anything like Anchorman in your?
No, not at all. It's funny you should say that. Because Eyewitness News, the concept was created by a gentleman named Al Primo, who just died a couple of weeks ago. He was 87 years old, and he created the concept down in Philadelphia, although the roots of it were even in Pittsburgh, where he used to work, and elsewhere. Yeah. But the concept basically at its heart is that, you know, TV news in the 60s was a dreadful, dull affair. It was a stentorian-voiced, white-haired man with, you know, horn-rimmed glasses reading AP copy.
Yeah.
You know, very
yeah.
few visuals. Graphical elements, and Primo said, no, news is about people first.
Yeah.
We're gonna hire reporters. He was even turning people who weren't reporters in the KYW newsroom down in Philly, but who were, you know, were in the newsroom, who were intelligent, and said, I'm gonna make you a reporter. I'm gonna give you a mic, you're going out, you're gonna cover the story.
Yeah.
You know, and he created beat systems, and so he professionalized local news by making sure that we were doing original local reporting. It was, and the eyewitness concept comes from not just like reading wire copy or making some phone calls, but going to the scene, getting the interview, sticking that Circle 7 microphone right into the camera view there, and bringing the news to the people, then bringing that story back to the anchors at the station, who serve as eyewitnesses, the reporters serving as eyewitnesses, and then creating the team concept, you know, reporters, anchors, everybody working together, people that like each other, God forbid, people that like each other, so it becomes a family. And that was very appealing to viewers. And Eyewitness News has done some really extraordinary journalism over the year. One of the most notable things that Primo executive produced, but the Geraldo Rivera, who was got its start here at Channel 7, right here on this block, was an investigation into a center for people with disabilities on Staten Island called Willowbrook. He got remarkable footage and did extraordinary reporting, for which, from where we're standing, you can see the Emmy Award
for that
investigation.
The Emmy is right there. Right there.
That's Geraldo's Emmy that we've hung on to. I'm sure he has his own copy. And
hopefully that's not the closest I'll ever get to an Emmy.
Oh, I think we can. Well, once we do our piece on the Pizza Hut wedding.
Oh, I think we're gonna
we have a shot for the EGOT.
I think
we're going all the way with this.
I think so. We'll make that documentary. I think we could have an Academy Award for Best Documentary.
I think so. Yeah. And it all began here. And you heard it here first.
Right, let's wrap it up. I'll walk you back to Regis.
You
said let's meet at the Regis Philbin.
You know,
right, let's take a look at that, and then we'll
which
say
has
our
become something of a icon.
We'll say our goodbye. So this is the entrance to WABC 7,
and this is where the Regis Philbin would come in here every morning to record a show. It began as the morning show in 1983. Regis was, of course, well known at the time, but he had not yet had this transcendent moment of explosive fame.
Yeah,
this station produced that show. Regis just sort of hit, it just happened for him here. And it happened for WABC here with the show. I mean, there had been morning shows here going back years that had never quite taken off. This took off. It eventually became Live with Regis and Kathy Lee.
Kathy Lee, yeah.
For a big chunk of that run.
That was a very popular show.
Very popular show. And it still is. And now it's Ryan Seacrest and Kelly Ripa.
Yeah.
And it's still I believe it's the number one syndicated talk show. I think it is. And it's very, very successful show. And it is still produced out of this very building where it has been made all these years, you know. So
have a look for Ryan Seacrest on the way out.
Yeah, please. He might be. You know, how are you? So, in fact, that was Jim Dolan, who was also a legendary reporter here at Channel 7 for decades. It's, you know, for me, who grew up in New York watching this station from childhood, to work here, to work with these giants, and to play a role working on the digital team and working on strategy and helping this place evolve for the 21st century. I mean, it's a dream job. If I could go back to talk to my 4-year-old self, the child of Cuban immigrants living in suburban New York in a small apartment, I blow the kid's mind. Yeah. Really? I'm going to work there one day?
Exactly.
So it's a very, very special place and a great iconic institution to be associated with.
Well, Rolando, we'll let you go back and smoke. Thank you so much for talking today.
My pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed it.
It was so much fun.
Amazing.
Anytime. And see you at the Pizza Hut wedding.
Yeah, so. Pizza Hut wedding. Perfect. Thanks, Rolando.
Yeah, you bet.
That episode of Park Date. There's lots more where that came from, and there'll be more in the future as well. If you enjoyed it, please leave a review, good or bad, make them funny. I'll be reading out the best ones, and there'll be a prize for the one that makes me laugh the most. Name check some trees in your reviews and leave them wherever you get your podcast from. Check out our website, parkdate.co.uk, and if you see me walking around in the park, come and say hello. I think that was the sound of someone sneezing. Yes, thank you. Bye bye. On the next episode of Park Date, join me and Dame Maggie Smith as we take a nude walk on a park date through the Englischer Garten in Munich. It will be a park date that no one around us will ever forget.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.